it was just really cool for me to see that our alums are so still connected and still love the game. A lot of them still play, and I think for me it's moments like that where it warms my heart. You know, I love our family, which, you know, our mantra has been our family versus their team, and anytime I see that in black and white with our team, it puts a smile on my face.
Welcome to Denver for Cause Athletics podcast. My name is Warren Croxon, Assistant Sports Information Director. This podcast is created for fans of Denver for Cause Athletics to get to know some great student athletes, coaches, administrators, and athletic department. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching for Denver for Cause Athletics in the podcast app on your iPhone. Fans could also listen online at podomatic.com. This episode of the podcast features women's soccer head coach Jamie Schneck. In her 9 years at Haverford, Schneck has compiled a record of 95, 47, and 24 for a winning percentage of 657, the best in program history. The Fords have won one Centennial Conference crown and have been to the NCAA tournament twice under Schneck's watch. In this interview, the coach discusses how she got into the sport, her time at Haverford, and much more. Here's how the interview went. So Jamie, first off, you are the first coach to join the Haverford Athletics podcast, which immediately makes you my favorite coach for doing this. So thank you for doing it. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
Being the women's soccer coach, let's go all the way back to when you first started playing. What kind of made you get into soccer when you were younger?
I loved running around. I loved being a part of the team. And really, I love getting ice cream after games.
Okay.
And so when I was 5 years old, we had a coach who, after every game, would buy the team ice cream, and I loved ice cream. So it seemed like you had to play and run around, be with friends, and then get a treat afterwards. So that's what sparked my interest in the sport.
Did you play any other sports when you were younger? What kind of separated separated soccer from the rest?
Yeah, I actually, all through high school, I ran cross country, played soccer, and played basketball, and I also really enjoyed tennis, and I really enjoyed basketball as well. But I think with soccer, for whatever reason, something just totally clicked, and I loved being outside. I loved everything about the sport. I don't think I can articulate it, but there was something special about it. And I think between the coaches I had and the teammates, and, you know, just enjoying, you know, fresh air when the weather was nice, it became my favorite.
Not including ice cream, what has been some of your major influences in the sport?
Playing in college obviously had a really big impact on my life. I mean, my path to playing a collegiate sport was pretty different than most. I actually was a walk-on, and I didn't even know what college soccer is really about, and I was fortunate enough to be able to walk on and, you know, have it be a great experience. And I think, to me, I loved being a part of a team more than the sport itself. I loved the camaraderie, I loved the moments, I loved to compete, I loved to win, but I loved being a part of something. And I knew when my college days were over that I just couldn't walk away from the game, and I couldn't walk away from that type of environment because it meant so much to me.
What kind of sparked your interest to getting involved in coaching?
Well, after I was done playing at Muhlenberg, I was pretty depressed for a little bit and then realized life has to go on. And to be honest, I really didn't know what I wanted to do after I graduated. I knew that I wanted it to revolve around athletics, and not necessarily in the coaching realm. I wasn't sure. So I applied to it for a few jobs. And then I went through going to grad school and had it paid for by getting a graduate assistantship and then majoring in sport management. And that really sparked my interest because I wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do, but to get a master's degree and to get it paid for and then also be able to coach and see if this really was something that I was truly interested in, it just seemed like a great opportunity. And, you know, I got to be honest, it was a little hard because most of my friends knew exactly what they were doing and what job they were going right on to. And, you know, I didn't quite know yet because I was waiting to hear back from where I applied. And it all worked out in the end.
Talk about the differences between becoming a grad assistant and then moving on to becoming an assistant. Were there any major changes that you had to make?
I mean, I think you get more responsibility as you get more experienced. Every head coach has a different style, has a different philosophy, and has different expectations. So I think with each different school I worked at, figuring that out. And then for me, as far as building my own philosophy, it was my mom that once said this to me, and it really kind of stuck, is, you know, whether you're having a good experience or a bad experience working for anyone, and this is in life in general, you will can always take what you like and take what you dislike to help form what you want to become. And so every experience is really valuable, and that helped me a lot, because I was really fortunate to work under some great people. So I never really had a bad experience, but I was always thinking about, okay, you know, I can't be this person, it's not my personality, but what do they do, or what are some things that they see, or, you know, that I would really like to make sure when I become a head coach that I want to implement myself.
So let's go through the whole experience looking at head coaching jobs, and what are some of the things that attracted you to Haverford?
I mean, I knew that I loved my Muhlenberg experience, and I think one of the reasons why I liked it was just the type of school, a community feeling. I loved the conference. Coming from Washington and Lee, I was used to working at a strong academic school, and Haverford kind of fit all the criteria. You know, I knew I really wanted to work at a strong academic institution because I really respect the balance of being able to be a great student but also be a great athlete, and I don't necessarily think they have to be two mutually exclusive things. And I also love community. You know, I think, you know, I look at our program and how much we really emphasize team and family, and I think that's a hard thing to you know, emphasize when the school itself doesn't feel that way. And I think Haverford really does have that great community feel, and you know, that was definitely shown in my interview. You know, just seeing how the coaches interact, how warm this place was. I love the location, I'll be honest. I mean, it's pretty hard, I think, to find a D3 institution like Haverford that's in an awesome hotspot, you know. And I think, you know, the school just fit all the criteria, all the checks in the box, and I was really fortunate to get this position. And to this day, I always say I got my dream job, and I really did.
How have you developed your coaching philosophy from when you first got hired here to where you are now?
Well, I was 25 when I got the call saying I got the job, and I'm 34 right now. So I would like to think I've matured a little bit. And I think that, you know, when you're first hired and it's your first head coaching job, you're just you're in go mode. You know, you're really learning as you go. You're learning how to interact. And I also think it was different because I was so young, so I had to make such an effort to make sure that there was this line drawn between, you know, players and coaching staff. And while there's still that line drawn now, no one's going to mistake me for being a player anymore, you know. And again, I think the more you're around people, the more you coach, the more things you learn about, you know, what you need as a coach and what your players need to be successful. And obviously that changes. I think recruiting in itself has changed in 9 years, just the nature of it. But I definitely think, I would like to think that I've matured a little bit and have a better sense of things. And you're always a student of the game, which is also a really cool thing, is, you know, you never stop learning, and professional development is something that is very important to me. And, you know, so there's still a long way to go.
You already have the best winning percentage in program history. Have you ever taken some time to kind of reflect upon your time here and any particular moment to kind of stand out?
I think the moments that stand out to me, obviously, like, you remember some good wins. You definitely remember some tough losses. You know, it's funny, U.S. won his national team game last night. Abby Wambach's last game before retirement. We had a little bit of an email chain going with alums, and it was just really cool for me to see that our alums are so still connected and still love the game. A lot of them still play, and I think for me it's moments like that where it warms my heart. You know, I love our family, which, you know, our mantra has been our family versus their team, and anytime I see that in black and white with our team, it puts a smile on my face. And then as far as winning and games that I remember, I mean, without a doubt, I'll always remember the our Centennial Conference Championship. I'll always remember finding out we got an at-large bid in 2013. And I'll remember some tough losses, but I'll also you know, this year I'll remember some really big battles and tough fights that our team went through. And I think that there are all these moments that you like come out at different times in your head and you're like, gosh, wow, I'm really lucky to be a part of it.
You've grown up, you grew up with the 99 team and you grew up through, you know, Abby too. So you've grown up through two of the best, you know, stretches of women's soccer in U.S. history. Is there a way you can actively reflect upon the impact that Abby's had on women's soccer and then maybe kind of go back to what the 99 team meant to you?
Well, the 99 team, I'll just start with that because I remember the World Cup in the U.S. was when I was a senior in high school heading into my first year of college that summer. Mm-hmm. And I just remember watching every game and being so, like, in awe of it all. And so my favorite player was Julie Foudy, still is. And, you know, that is what motivated me through my college career, is watching that national team and going, these are my heroes. I want to play like them. I want to be like Julie Foudy in the middle of the field, you know. And I think it's changed, obviously, because I'm older. And I try to watch the game differently. But I think the thing that the 99 group did was they kind of set the tone. And what's been great to see about Abby Wambach is that she has continued to lay the foundation of what that 99 team did, and just how she speaks in front of others, and how she articulates herself, how she always puts the team above herself. I mean, I think the thing that I remember this past summer in the World Cup in Canada was the fact that Abby Wambach was on the bench, and you know, you zoom in looking at her and she's the first one, you know, yelling at the team, supporting them and cheering them on. And I think it's so easy to, you know, talk about, you know, what does it mean to be a good teammate, but here it is, you know, one of the best players in the world being, you know, sidelined, and you know, she's still being a leader, she's still having impact, she's still doing the things that she needs to do because she knows that's what's best for the team. You know, and I think for me to see that at the top level, I mean, it's pretty cool because, you know, if you're playing on a World Cup team or an Olympic team, you are the best at that sport. And so to think that you are the best and you are being sidelined, that's a gut check. And I have no doubt it's probably hard, but it was really amazing for me to see how well she handled that. And I think that it's one of the many things I love about sport and how much you can learn from it.
Speaking of the World Cup, you had the opportunity to go see a couple games up in Canada. Watching it when you were younger, the 99 team, being able to actually go to the games this time around, what is there a way you can describe what that was like for you?
It was so cool. And what made it hard is because I was there with a group of 30 coaches. We were there for professional development for a program. And you're there to learn, but you're also still a fan. And so I was trying to find the balance between being, you know, really giddy and excited versus, okay, you know, I'm here for a reason. Let's make sure I get something out of this and can really focus on what I'm trying to accomplish. So I think the balance of that was, you know, being like a super fan versus, you know, making sure that I'm becoming a better coach through this experience was what, you know, was the challenge.
This part of the interview is some quick rapid-fire questions, so give me the first thing that pops into your head.
All right.
Favorite movie?
Shawshank Redemption.
Favorite book?
Sister's Keeper by Jodi Picoult.
Favorite food?
Nachos.
Favorite vacation spot?
Costa Rica.
Your favorite superhero or cartoon growing up?
Thundercats.
What is the most played song on your iTunes playlist?
Les Miserables, One Day More.
So these questions are a little bit more deep thinking. If you could change one rule about your sport, what would it be?
No offsides.
Which coach or administrator would you most want to be stuck on a desert island with?
Coach Cox. She would get me in shape.
If you could bring three things with you on a desert island, what would they be?
A soccer ball, my husband,
That's messed up. You're going to a desert island, you're going to bring someone to suffer with you?
Well, I'd probably get bored. And
you'll never be bored with Jackie, let's be honest.
And probably my iPhone or iPad, if that's allowed.
There's no electricity. It's a deserted island.
I asked this question to other people, too. This is harder than I thought. A soccer ball, a friend, or my husband, and a match, or a lighter.
What is the number one thing on your bucket list?
I'd really like to go to New Zealand and Fiji.
If you could have one superpower, what would it be and why?
To heal people.
Finish this statement. I can't believe I once...
bungee jumped and skydived on the same day.
Whoa! That's an that's like an adrenaline rush. What was that? Like, what was that whole experience like?
I was studying abroad, and we had the opportunity to do it, and it all happened in one day, and it was awesome.
I already know the answer to this, but you can't pick the obvious one. If there was one sporting event you could attend, what would it be and why? Since you already attended that one event.
Oh, it can't be that?
Can't be that.
I think the Olympics. I would really love to go to the Summer Olympics.
If you had a golden ticket and go to any concert, past or present, who would the band be?
Oh, it wouldn't be a band, it would be Beyonce.
Okay. How do you like to spend a rainy day?
Watching movies. Well, the idea of watching movies sounds great. I'd probably get a little stir crazy and probably clean up. Like, I like to clean, but I guess movies would be the right thing to say.
What's your go-to movie on a rainy day, or just in general?
I love Tommy Boy.
Yes! That's one of my favorites, too.
Good taste, Warren.
If you could bring back one thing from your childhood, what would it be?
I lived on a street growing up where all my neighbors, we would always used to play outside. And I guess I thought that was awesome. I loved playing, like, pickup basketball or creating relay races or, like, these obstacle courses. I just had the best time, so.
You're going to a dinner at the table. You can invite three people, past or present. Who would they be and why?
I would want to have dinner with Julie Foudy, my grandpa, and Anson Doors.
You're walking down the street one day and accidentally bump into yourself 10 years into the future. Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
I see myself with a family, and I see myself hopefully still at Haverford, and just being content and loving our team, loving my family, and just having the best of all worlds and being happy.
Here's a good question. Would you want to coach your child in soccer?
No. Gosh, no.
Too stressful? Too stressful for you?
I want the kids to succeed.
What advice would you give to the high school version of yourself?
Work hard. Try not to stress as much as you do. And enjoy the ride. Things have a crazy way of working themselves out.
Thank you to Jamie for coming onto the podcast. This will be the final episode of 2015. As always, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching for Haverford College Athletics on the podcast app on your iPhone or listening online at podomatic.com. Stay tuned as next year we'll have more winter athletes. Thanks for listening, happy holidays, and of course, go Fords!